Welcome to episode 3 of season 3 of the Hook podcast. This episode, we're lucky enough to be blessed with the presence of Al McGlashan and his family. So strap in, sit back, and enjoy another episode of the Hook podcast.
On the boat, mayhem on just one more.
What a fish.
Well, we've got the McGlashan family in tow tonight for the Hook podcast. So we've got Al, we've got Ords and Coop. So welcome once again to the Hook podcast. It's been awesome to be able to manage to get you guys out of your busy schedule and slam yous into another episode with us. So thanks for your time. All right, so we'll start off with Coops and Ords. Al, we'll get to you later. We know you're the superstar, so we'll save you for last.
I'm just the background, mate. That's all I'm in. Just the background noise.
So I was lucky enough to catch up with you guys up the East Coast for the Marlin season. I didn't get to see you, Coops, unfortunately. I think you were off work, and that was a day that we had a day of four, by the way. So just letting you know that one. But Ords, so obviously, out doing a lot of sword fishing. I seen you got your sword. So tell us a bit about that and what's the plans? Are you going back for more?
Absolutely. When it comes to swording, well and truly. Gosh, that was when we get the last sword.
We got two the last trip. So we got yours, then we got Coops' big one. Because it'd be a year since we've had
it's actually been over, I think it's 2 years. 2 years since we last had you guys on the show. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. Welcome to COVID.
Pandemic thrown in there.
Yep. So I think Coops had, I think you were just getting like, there was a lot more of you on the show with your dad and that. So you just sort of stepped into that. I know you were targeted
for clients and for talent. And, we couldn't get anyone that was any good.
They bought the impact player in.
Yeah, so we just went for child labor, basically. So
the impact player, Coops, don't let him get to you.
It only went uphill there for him, so it's okay.
Right. We all know.
You know, the real concerning part is that, like all child labor, you only pay for food. At 6'3", he costs a fortune, so we actually got done over. I'm not being died on. She's looking at me like, don't say that. So it ended up really killing us. So it cost me a fortune putting him on there.
And when you talk about sword fishing, we had no choice. Al and I had gone out to start the season last year and we brought in our first sword. So that was, with two of us on the boat, that was a bit of a challenge to get it on board. So we figured the next day we had to take Coops out instead because we really needed him to get it on board. Thank God we did because he brought in a massive one. How big was it, Coops?
What, 270?
Yeah, 270 kilos or something. So
we really needed it.
Is that the biggest one that's been caught in Vic?
Last year, I think it was when we caught it because COVID stopped everyone. Yeah, so last season. Well, this season, we've got them to 140. I've heard of a couple of fish at 200, but not as many. Yeah, it hasn't been. I'm surprised they haven't got a 300. The Kiwis have got a couple of real nice ones over 300.
Yeah.
But there hasn't been as much. Yeah, it's been a bit quiet this year. Guys down Tassie have got a couple, but... Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening sort of down in the Bass Canyon. Well, that's a bit slower so far this season.
Is that the biggest fish you've got, Coops?
Yeah, it would be by a long margin.
Yeah, you've only caught 130 kilo bluefin, all these other big things.
The most important thing is ask him who hooked his first swordfish of the season.
For this season, yeah.
Your first swordfish of the season.
Who hooked it?
And then who gave it away in about 3 seconds?
So Ords was winding up the rod. We're going to check it. And you just see, we've got on the camera and it just loads up. So fish ate it on the way up. She goes, oh, and she goes, this has got really heavy. Turn around, went, you're on. And Coops has just charged across.
No, I did not. You can see in the video, I was like, you guys have been complaining. Oh, I don't want to wind up a fish today. I'm too old and too frail.
Sound that girly.
It was like one of those rugby in the grand final, NRL, super duper, Queensland versus New South Wales. He jumped across, he ducked between rods, he weaved, grabbed the rod and started cranking.
Yep.
You got to do what you got to do, Coops. You got to do what you got to do, mate.
That's exactly right.
So standing on the deck.
But later on, we fished 4 days. We got that on the first day and then got nothing for the next 2 days. And then the last day, we had a sat tag to put out. And same thing, checking the gear. And I felt a tap as I went to wind the gear up. Went, that's a fish. Grabbed it in my hand. Went, oh, this is a little one. This is a proper one. So I thought I'd wind it up because I thought, oh, this will only be 40 kilos. Anything bigger than that, I'm not touching, you know. It wound up, went, yep, 40 kilos, perfect. Put a tag in and go, that's how you do it, Coach. None of those
things. Are they swimming off real well? Because I know they're coming up from a long way. So I've seen on Facebook and Instagram and all that, got like you guys out there tagging and doing all that sort of stuff. Obviously, you've got to pick which fish you're going to sat tag because they're not cheap. We all know that. But survivability, are they pretty robust?
So we're getting 100% so far with our fish. So you are getting hooked, you know, mouth hooked fish. We haven't let a really big one go yet. That's our next thing. The interesting thing with swords, like they're really unique species that they can live, because you think of it, right? They're down 600 meters and it's 6-7 degrees. You hook them, they come straight to the top. 99.9% of the time, they'll come up to the point where unhooking the lights within 50 meters of the, you know, of the bait or the fish, I suppose you'd say. And not only are you doing massive, you know, change in pressure, you're also doing the temperature. Like your surface temperature this year was 22 degrees. They've come screaming up in the space of 10 to 15 minutes from 9 degrees to 25, 23 degrees. Like thinking of, you know, when we're outside and it's like, you know, 20 degrees, a cold front comes through and it drops down to 18 and we're like, oh, bitching and moaning and carrying on. These things have just done that. But they do it. We learn from the sat tag. They do it every day. Yep. So every day they're down deep between 400 and 600 meters and they come straight up to the top to feed, you know, and then back down at daylight. So it's part of their thing. The only thing, and we're still early days yet, we're trying to learn which fish are the right ones to let go and which ones aren't. So far we've picked them and they've all been, because the tags will drop off. If the fish dies and sinks to the bottom, the tag will drop off within 48 hours. So if they stay below, I think it's 500 meters for 48 hours, it's deemed dead.
Yeah, okay.
And it comes off so that we know, but they've, so far they're all coming off. And the other thing we've noticed with the couple we've tagged so far is that we thought they'd move back up to Queensland to the spawning grounds. They haven't. They've all stayed down south, you know, gone into New South Wales and hung around there and that's it. So got lots more learning to do.
Well, I know there was a little sword caught out off Burmese probably about 5 weeks ago now, caught out there. So they're obviously all up and down the East Coast. So, you know, I suppose it's now that we've got the equipment, we've got the technology. I've seen some of the stuff that you did for Furuno and some of the videos that you've been doing with those guys. And you're pretty right and you've hit the nail on the head. They've got nowhere to hide anymore. Like the technology is just so, so good that it's, you're literally hunting fish now. Like it's, you know.
Yeah,
it's
such a different world that we're, you know, we're running multiple transducers. We can read out to 800 fathoms now, so we can read the bottom at trolling speed in a 6.5 meter boat.
Are you rolling fathoms, Coop?
Yeah,
what? I'm the only one. Everyone we're in fathoms, and everyone else is in meters. So
yeah,
we got a different boat going. Oh, it's, you know, 4 meters here, and you're going, you think again. Yeah,
hang on, I'll change that. I'll go back. So when
Coops, don't go down that rabbit hole, Coops. Don't do it.
Fathoms are nautical.
Metric system. Come on.
But it is, but it's been unreal. And the funny thing is, like, now we've got a radar set up. Like, everyone wants one for safety. I want a radar to find birds, you know, like all these things that we change. We've got transducers just to find swordfish ground and find the bait, you know, the scatter layer and all these things. So it has changed. People don't realise that a lot of our research or a lot of our fisheries is based on catch rates. That's how we work out what, you know, how many fish are there. We're getting better and better at catching them. So we're artificially keeping our catch rates up, because our technology is increasing. You think of your phones and everything, how quick it's going, and you think of what it can do. You know, we're doing sonars now that you can now, you know, search around the boat. Like the new one we've got, the new Furuno gear, it's what's it called? Wasp.
The Wasp.
Wasp. So as we're driving along, it almost, so it's like a side scan for at sea. So you've got all those ones for in, you know, estuaries and all that, but this one does it at sea. And a classic example, the other day, Coops and I driving along, he goes, oh, look at the bait on the side then. We're talking 50 metres out the side of the boat, and we're only, I don't know, a couple of miles off North Head, off Sydney, swung around onto the bait and went on top because we needed bait. And on the other side of it, there's this hard edge. I went, oh, there's a fish there straight away. Grabbed a bait, put it down. 2 minutes later, we're fighting a black marlin in, you know, in April when they're meant to have gone. Now, it wasn't on any spot. It was nowhere, but purely because our search zone has stretched out so much, mate, these poor things have literally nowhere to hide.
Yeah. It's I know a lot of the bigger boats were running that 360 degree sonar and stuff like that. It's all military grade, that's filtered down to us as wrecked fishers and all that sort of stuff. So it was only a matter of time before it got to the point where you could put it in a trailer boat. And it come, I suppose the other thing to that was too, price. It had to be at a price point where, you know, someone like me can go and afford it. So it was only a matter of time, and it's definitely hit. It's only going to get better.
When you think of it now that, you know, and the interesting thing there is that each boat, I'm spending more and more on my electronics. So as that stuff's getting cheaper, we're still investing more and more. So with this one, with my North Bank, I think I've got 68 grand in electronics in a 6.5 meter frigging boat. It's madness. Like, yep. You know, you've got radar, you've got autopilot, we're running 4 transducers, you know, all these things in it, and it's all purely for finding fish.
Yep.
Like it's a whole new world.
And birds.
And birds, yeah. I like finding the birds.
Always got to find the birds.
Oh, yeah. Tuna special, I tell you. It's awesome.
Well, we're just getting into that down here. So the tuna season, or I shouldn't say getting into it, it's been firing a hell of a lot down here. So I'll come back to that anyway. So Ords, I see you're doing a bit of the video editing side of the house now. And is Elle letting you on the camera to shoot stuff, or are you got to sort of fight him off a bit?
Well, I'd have to say, if anybody asks me what a job description is, I think it's to keep Elle's bum out of shot. But
I should have been a plumber.
He's the one they want to see in front of the camera. So I'm much happier being behind the camera. And really, both of the boys are exactly the same, whether on camera or off camera. Hey, so I just point.
I have to go with Ords on that one, Coops. I have seen some video edits of
pixelated
crack around. So, you know, like
he's a plumber's son.
Yeah. I come from a family of plumbers, and I've never seen that many plumbers' cracks. So
no, but the important thing is, like, as a small business, is everyone's got to do what they're best at. Mine is exposing my bum. Ords is taking the photos. Like, she's left me for dead. Like, when we first started talking.
Coops us.
Talent.
Oh. Talent, yeah. He's catch up.
Talent's not the word I do.
Fish whisperer.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and Ords was, you know, she left us from dead from day one for photos and stuff. And even now I'm like, yeah, okay, you just take photos. I'll take that. Yeah, mine's not even in focus anymore, you know.
There's been some good photos lately. So I've seen a couple of nice photos, some mahi-mahi. I know you've been smashing those a bit, Coops. You've been out doing a little bit with those and the kingfish. So there's been some really good pics and video of the kingfish out off Sydney. I know just as we're coming into the warmer water and you were out doing a fair bit of mahi-mahi videos and stuff like that, some of the shots that you got of those were awesome. So.
Well, yeah. Coop shot the drone. It was interesting. You filmed it. So I did do all the underwater because we found a boat out there and just thousands of mahi on it. So I jumped in, did a heap of underwater, and then got back in the boat when I burnt my cards through. And Coops goes, I'm going to put the drone up. And it was awesome, wasn't it? Like, we sat there and there were thousands of mahi around this thing. But he found these couple. He goes, have a look at the size of these. And once we moved away from the structure, there were, three or four proper ones.
Yeah,
you know,
at the start, meter 50s, when we were there first and we cast a few lures around, there's a few bigger ones coming through, and then they sort of moved off. And I was just waiting for Dad to get back in the boat, put the drone up, and then I was just cruising around having a look, you know, because it's just literally like mahi like that, half a meter long?
Yeah, up to a meter. Like, yeah, small ones,
it's a really small wandering around. And then all of a sudden, this massive, like, I don't know how big it would have been, but it was a proper one. Just went through the middle of them, making them look tiny. And I was like,
but it was interesting how big they were. Like, you're talking, they were meter 50s to meter 80s. You know, the other fish would have maxed out at probably 90 centimeters.
Yep.
And these things, you look at it, Coop's like, oh, that's a problem. I'm looking at them, holy cow, it's massive. We'll put a photo up on Insta and stuff so people can see them. But it was fascinating to see, because everyone, when they fish those fads, everyone fishes right next to it. And you go, stay away from it a bit for the bigger fish. And that was a classic example. And again, using technology, showed it, you know, where the bigger fish were. Didn't catch them, but, you know.
We, when we brought the boat back down from the Gold Coast, we found a water tank out in 1500 meters of water. And I marked that on the radar probably a good 6 nautical miles away. And it was where we were sort of heading anyway. So I sort of deviated a little bit to it. And I had Mick from Hook'em on the boat with me. And all he wanted to do was catch this dolphin fish. We'd been catching blue marlin the day before. And all he was excited about was dolphin fish. I'm like, Mick, come on. Like, anyway, so we found this thing. And exactly what you said, all the littler ones were really close to the water tank. And like, there was a lot of life around the water tank. But as we started heading off further, like, the boys are like, oh, we'll do another lap. Just one more. We'll go around again. Just one more. We'll do around. I'm like, oh, yeah, all right. And I started cutting the laps bigger and bigger, and the fish kept getting bigger and bigger. We ended up pulling 6 fish off that fad that would have been over 28, 30 kilos.
Yeah, proper ones. And they're all well off it. So, yeah. It's a good little point that the people don't realize. Don't stay right next to structure, you know. Stay away from it if you want to catch the big ones.
Yeah, well, so, but yeah, it's been interesting to watch. So that ties in then with the TV stuff and everything. Where are we at with the fishing with mates, all that sort of stuff? Is that still cracking along, or where are we at?
No, so we called Fishing with Mates off last year. We'd done 9 seasons, and I thought, you know, we're at a time where it's time to finish that up. But also on top of that is that we wanted to change direction away from brand-funded TV, where it was dictated to by sponsors and stuff, that we wanted to do more, because when we did Life on the Line, the Bluefin doco, it absolutely blitzed, and it's screaming up on, you know, on social media, on YouTube. It still rates really well on 7Mate and all that. And so we thought, let's want to change direction and have a more of a research sort of documentary style focus and do more of that side and work tighter in there. So show what's really going on. I mean, not just because it obviously rates better and stuff, but also that you show really good, genuine stories for what's happening, that, you know, whether it's about a species or about the changes in the currents or, you know, all these things, you get the real life stories in it as well. So that's been, so we've had quite a shift of focus on the way we're doing. And it's been, I suppose, a steep learning curve, but it's absolutely awesome side of things to do. Yeah, it's unreal what we learn.
Yeah, okay. So, Ords, were you a driving factor in this, or is this?
No, I wouldn't say that at all.
Come on, be honest and go, yeah.
No, I think it's all driven by Elle's passion. There's no doubt about that. But I think there's the Southern Bluefin showed that there's a hunger from wreck anglers and all out there to gain knowledge, to actually learn about the species. It's not just a case of getting out there and getting a feed. They actually want to learn more and more about it. They want to learn how to care for it. They want to learn if there's something they can do that can help that species. And I think everybody's got much more of a conscious knowledge or want to be conscious of what the individual can
yearning
do.
To do it, yeah,
I think it has been a real shift in everybody's focus. You know, it used to be go out there and fill the deck. I think that is changing with a lot of people now, and they want to know more about the species. They want to know how to protect it. We're seeing species where, you know, they're being driven to very low numbers, very low biomass, etc. And people want to feel like if there's something they can do on their normal fishing trip or anything associated with the environment or anything like that, there's real hunger out there to not. So it's a natural shift. It's also something that we find fascinating, and that automatically, you know, comes through in the filming of it, because we're excited about what we're learning, never mind imparting that to everybody else. So,
but I think the important thing there is too, is that fishing, if we understand what we did right and what we did wrong, then we have a basis to go forward and go, okay, we've hit the yellowfin really hard. We need to look at this, you know, in a different way. And so they understand. And in the past, it's always been, we blame them, you know, classic. They always, you know, bluefin, oh, it's the commercials, oh, it's the Japanese, oh, it's, you know, the wrecks. At the end of the day, everyone played a role.
Yeah,
whether it's, you know, a different amount, like, don't get me wrong, there were different levels of it, but at different times, but we all played a role in their demise, but then we're all playing a role in the recovery. So if we show it and go, this is what happened, these are the facts, this is what the fishery did, and this is what's changing now that we now need to address. I mean, you've got lots of different factors now. You've got, obviously, fishing pressures growing immensely. Like right now on the south coast of New South Wales, there's dozens of Japanese boats fishing the bluefin outside the AFZ. They're all sitting there right now.
Yeah.
So you've got that sort of pressure. You've also got, you know, emerging markets like China and these other countries are starting to hit more fisheries. You've got plastic in the ocean. You've got the oceans are warming up. Like the East Australian Current is increasing in temperature and speed more than any other current in the world. So it's changing and pushing further south and shifting, you know, fish habitat with it as it goes, you know. So it's understand this stuff, and it's not a negative. It's if we understand what's changing, we can then do something about it. But if we all sit there and go, oh, you know, everyone blames everyone else, going, hang on, that's the past. We're going forward now. This is what we need to do. And I think TV plays or documentaries, if they're done right, play a really important role in breaking down the barriers so that everyone can work together and go, oh shit, we really do need to work on that. So, and that's a big part of our aim.
That's a really good segue into the Pelagic Foundation. So I know you've been pretty active organizing a few things, and I know you're really, really active with the Tuna Champions. And that has definitely changed so much down here in Victoria. Like, just you pull up at a boat ramp now and you see all the wreck boats that are actually going out chasing tuna. They've all got ice on the back of the boat. They've all got things there to care for these fish. And you don't see the waste that you used to see, especially when we started fishing down there, like seeing, you know, the attitudes of people. So your docos have definitely made a massive change in all that sort of stuff and the way people approach it. But, you know, the Pelagic Foundation, what is the Pelagic Foundation and what's the plan there? Like, what's the overarching goal for establishing this foundation?
So the biggest thing we found is research, that we understand what's going on. We can't fix anything if we don't know what's actually going on. And we've had problems in the past where they go, you know, marine parks are always a classic where they went, we're going to lock up this headland and make it a sanctuary zone. It's like, well, what are you protecting? The ocean. Well, it's like, hang on, you're not protecting the ocean. You don't know what you're actually looking after. And so there's been a massive gap or a lack of funding into, particularly for us, so it's mainly obviously pelagic species, you know, surf species that we've been interested in. We still don't know, like, where black marlin spawn in the Indian Ocean. No one knows. We know where they spawn in you know, in the east, the Pacific Ocean here, or at least on the eastern, or what are we, the eastern side, western side. What side are we? Eastern side. Geographically, I'm not that sure on it, you know. But
left and right is a challenge as well, so let's just let it go.
That's why they're colour-coded, red or green.
Yeah, it's like, let me think about that. But we don't even know where half these fish spawn. So how the hell can we protect them if we don't even know where they go? So yep. One of the biggest things for that is satellite tagging that shows what these fish do and where they go, that we can start to get a basic mapping. The problem is with sat tagging, it's bloody expensive, you know, it's $6,000 a tag. So what we've, and I've done a lot of it over the years, what we decided to do was set up a foundation where we can help raise funds for the tags, but also most importantly, get researchers and fishermen together to help each other. So researchers will go and charter a commercial boat or, you know, hire a charter boat or whatever to go fishing. When I go, hang on, we can get the right people to actually get your tags out. Now, you get a bit of an issue where some scientists like it as a junket, you know, that they go on trips and just do it all themselves. What I'm trying to do is push that we go, let's get the right recreational anglers out there doing that part of the job and get the scientists collating the data and doing that so you can get more tags out, save money, put more tags out and actually really get an idea of what these fish are doing. Like we were saying earlier with swordfish, everyone thought they were all dying, but we used to have that exact same thing with all the bluefin. Oh, no, they all die because they bleed. but they can bleed heaps, so they still go back and swim. And we saw that with all the sap tagging we did with those. So for us, I think it's vital that we increase satellite tagging and really start pushing that so we get it. I mean, we were doing one the other day for the French government over in the Indian Ocean out off Exmouth. So not even the Australian government doing it. It's done by foreigners, like in our own waters. Or it's just give me the elbow going, don't get political. But we should be spending it. Like you sit there listening. We've got the election, you know, coming up. They're all going, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And they said, oh, we're going to put $20 billion into fishing. It's a $6 billion industry, wreck fishing, and they're going to put $20 billion in. That's the Libs. At least they're putting something in. Labor haven't even put anything in. But I sit there going, we're forced to be reckoned with. And we don't get looked after at all.
Yeah.
Sorry, Orts. I didn't mean to get political. I'm getting the evil eye here.
Have you got a website or somewhere to go? Like, if I wanted to look it up, if I wanted to contribute to it, if I want to donate or however it's set up at the moment, where do I go to find out about it?
So at the moment, sitting under a branch on almaglashan.com. We've got the meetings this month to set up. It's a non-profit organisation, so everything goes back into it. But we've got to do all the government, tick all the boxes and all those things and set up. So we're just doing that this month, so it's very much in its infancy. But I foresee in the next couple of months, it'll all be up and running. We'll start putting, you know, sponsorships available for tagging, whether it's individuals, you know, for the tags, or we can set up the more corporate end of town, all that as well. But really start getting together and start getting anglers are kinks. We've also got to deal with things with, you know, animal welfare and all those sort of things. A lot of research, they have to get a tick to be able to even go and conduct any research. You know, we're not using it for women's makeup on some poor monkey and stuff like that. We're putting a tag in a fish, but you've got, I'm going to say it, radical greens that are against everything that fight it. So we have to tick all those boxes as well that to make sure we do it. But at the end of the day, it's stuff that we have to do. Every fish we've sap tagged so far has lived. You know, we put that large swordfish the other day. I'm hanging to see. He's got 300 days on that tag before it pops off. And, I mean, they normally pop off early and stuff, but I'm hanging to see what the little bugger is doing and where he's swimming because he's a smaller one to what we tagged larger than last time. So, and hopefully we'll get back down and start tagging a few more later this month, and just, you know, more tags out, we can start getting a clearer picture of what they're doing.
Yeah, okay.
And the Pelagic Foundation, even though that's now coming into fruition, Al's still been involved in so much of the tagging, but it's always been well and truly at his own cost, et cetera, as well. So as you know well and truly, the cost of fuel and all of that sort of thing goes up as well. So this is to make sure that all of that valuable science doesn't lose its momentum, but instead, you know, it's supported to get that data to learn as much as we possibly can with it as well.
And maybe going forward, the more money actually that they spend on this stuff, that these research grants could go back to the fishermen that we volunteer. But it's like the other day we put that sat tag in, I think we spent driving down and back $3,000 in fuel for 4 days fishing to catch two fish and to let one go with the tag in it. Maybe, and I'm probably pushing the boundary a bit now, that maybe the wrecks should be paid for their fuel at least, you know, contribute, because we will put it all up, you know, whether it be the New South Wales Game Fish Tagging Program, all these things, we pay for it all ourselves and we get no thanks or anything from government other than lockouts and things like that. And you see, they're going, hang on, we're doing all this research that sometimes gets used against us. That, you know, it's frustrating. I'm only going a little political, I'm not going too political.
But it's just too valuable to let it fall by the wayside, basically. So, yeah, we'll do everything we can to support any of that science, any of that work towards our pelagics and protecting them before anything.
There's definitely been a massive shift. And, I mean, like, Coops and I are both young pups. So, you know, we don't remember what it was like.
You know, Coops.
You know, I remember fishing with Dad and fishing tournaments over at Burmy, especially for yellowfin, when, like, we'd come back in and there'd be boats with 15, 20 yellowfin laying on the deck. I mean, you're never going to eat all that sort of stuff. And you watch them at the boat ramp just handing stuff away or then taking it out and using it for burley the next day and things like that. And you're like, oh. And that, you know, really hurt us. But that mind shift has really started. So people like me and Coops and, you know, Coops, kids, all that sort of stuff, they're going to have all this stuff, especially, you know, someone like yourself who's paving the way with this stuff. That's going to pay dividends for generations to come. So I think it's a big talking point, and you're probably right. Like, I don't want to get political because I really don't buy into any of that too much, but you've really hit the nail on the head when the government really needs to understand that being a $20 billion industry, the wreck fishery, we are a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, more people need to listen and have a look at what we're actually doing. So it is a strong point. It's awesome that you've gone out of your way to start that foundation and get everything up and running. So I look forward to seeing what it's going to generate there.
Yeah, watch this space. We're still learning, but watch this space. It'll get bigger and better. We'll start making things happen.
Yeah, nice. All right, so we sort of touched on it earlier, the new boat. Last time I spoke to you, you were sort of keeping things under wraps a little bit. You were hinting that there was a bit of a change in the way coming. So I'm going to throw it to Coops to answer this one. How has the new boat been? And is he pretty anal with the new boat, mate? Does he let you scratch it or put sinkers on it or anything like that? How's he actually going with the new boat?
I have never seen someone that is willing to go out there and polish the boat like once a week.
It's not once a week.
We get back from in, you know, you're doing your gurneying and stuff. We go, you're missing dirt. There's dirt sitting there. You're not. Cooper, there's dirt sitting there. You know, so.
That's because you're just crap at your job. Don't go way down.
You know, it's like a teenager hose with a hose or a goonie just going.
Holding it. Oh, do you know this is a podcast? So when you do that, you actually have
You got to actually talk about it. You can't. Yeah. No, for everyone that's listening, Ords is just looking up at the sky with a hand holding the boat, spraying everywhere.
Touching the boat, it might be washing off the side, but no.
I don't see you going in the boat.
But no.
So the new boat, obviously, it's opened some more doors in a few ways. I noticed in one of your videos or your, I think it was on YouTube. I can't remember which one it was, but you guys had been sleeping on the boat, which is something that you didn't really, well, you sort of did on the old boat, but this one's a bit more comfortable and all that sort of stuff. So are you happy with the decision? Is it the right way? If you could do it again, would you change anything? And do you know how long a wait on a new boat is right now?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we picked at the perfect time. So originally when we were running the Evolutions make a great fishing boat, but like all boats, it's a compromise. So you get great deck space, but with great deck space will always come a bang because it's just, yeah, you get the stability, can't have both. The problem we're getting, and this goes back to what we were saying before, is we're traveling further and further to get fish. Technology is allowing us to do that. The old boat wasn't up to that, to do that style of fishing, you know. So went to a North Bank from, Rob makes them down South Australia. Couple of main things with it, heavier boat, slightly bigger, even though it says that they're both 650 length. It's a true 650, so we're talking waterline as opposed to above waterline. But being fully enclosed meant we could run to sea in any weather, which we're finding more like, you know, if you're fishing down out of lakes or something, you've got, you know, 100K run to the grounds a lot of the time. It's crap if there's any sea. You know, if you've got a quartering sea, you're just getting flogged the whole way. So comfort for the run has been really important. Like every boat, it's got higher sides on it. The deck's probably a tiny bit smaller. I'd say it's still that for fishability, I still like the Evolution for what it was just for deck space. But overall, like with the finish and everything, the North Bank leaves it for dead. I can run more electronics. I've got a higher like hard top on it. So the radar sits higher up. So the aerial sits higher up. Still got the side door to get fish in through it. So we're catching a lot more fish out of it because we're allowed to fish a lot more weather. And, I mean, the finish on the boat is insane. Like, we've already done 1,000, I think we're on 800 hours now in the first year, and that's been reduced dramatically, you know, to what we normally do. We probably have done 1,500 hours if, you know, without COVID and all that other crap going on. And it's been absolutely awesome for that side. So like all boats, we've changed lots on it. And, you know, I have an ongoing thing with Australian boats that they don't make the fuel tanks big enough.
Yeah, I agree.
Just a US boat the same size is 550 litres. An Aussie boat, I'm at max at 300 litres. I just, if we do big days, we're running our fuel. I like to come home on 40% as a safety margin. You can't do it in Australia, like without putting jerrys all over. And you see, it's great. You see on social media, all the guys have been tuna fishing, all jerrys in the back of their boat. And you sit there going, how on earth? It's just, I don't understand with Australia. I mean, remember when we did the evolutions in the early days, I said, you're going to need a bigger dash. We're going to put more electronics in. Oh, people don't do that. So they will. And now look at it. Like, we can't fit it. There's not enough dash in any bloody trailer boat for all the sounders, screens and radars and everything else we're running, you know. So yeah, it's been, for a new boat, it's been absolutely awesome. Like, we can drive it on a fish really well. But I think the biggest thing is you don't get wet. I hate getting wet going to sea. And your motivation.
This is coming from the guy that jumps overboard and swims.
That's right.
I don't know how to take that comment, mate. Like, hate getting wet, exactly. But you know, I'll jump over and swim with sharks and tuna. Yeah, great, good call.
That didn't sound convincing at all, did it?
Not at all.
So
they don't actually get to use the skipper's seat because Mahi actually owns the skipper's seat.
Oh, the bloody dog! Yeah,
the Kelpie's in there all the time.
So how good is it though? Like, I've got to be honest, we got two Kelpies that fish with us as well. And Scout is my little girl. She's my little girl. So she'll be up in the fly bridge with me and I'll get up there and I can't sit in the seat at all. She's curled up on it. She's sitting there.
Yeah. And it's my to a T.
They must be related to these bloody things. It's,
and
can't sit in his own seat.
Well, do you notice too that, so like Tara, when he's down on the back deck, so he doesn't come up to the fly bridge too much. He doesn't like it up there. He'll stay down on the back deck, but he will smell a seal, I reckon, a good K and a half, 2 Ks away, and you'll see him, his ears will prick up, and he'll just be looking around, and then he gets up on the gunwale, and he'll be sticking his head out the side, looking at everything, and then he'll start barking, and you're sort of like, what's he looking at? And then all of a sudden, you'll see this seal off in the distance or whatever. And you're like, oh, all right. So you cruise over there and have a look as you do. But they're just as good as the radar sometimes.
They're better. If they've got the wind in their favor, for Mai's onto the dolphin, she's not sure about seals. She thinks they're obviously, you know, mangy dogs or something. She doesn't like them. But she loves seals, and if we're catching fish, if there's a marlin jumping, she's on it every time. It's amazing how much they pick up on it.
It leaves us feeling quite inadequate, especially when she's realised there's something there and none of us have spotted it, and we've got three sets of eyes at least out there. But we also reckon she's on to bait because she'll be sound asleep as she spends most of the day, and then she'll just be wide awake and down onto the deck over the side of the boat looking, and we're all of a sudden all looking around where she is to try and work out where it is. You can see she's smelling the air and everything else, and I swear she smells a bust out before we do. Well, definitely before we smell it, but also sometimes.
Maybe that's what we need to get into our sounders and stuff. We need to get a sniffer radar or something.
Yeah, we need a sniffer dog version in there. Yeah, we need a Kelpie version in a radar, like a Kelpie mode.
So with the boat then, so is there anything that you'd change? If you could, you know, you've obviously had a few boats. So, I mean, everyone watches the TV shows. We've all grown up with Al McGlashan fishing and all this sort of stuff. We look at our Lee Rayners, Paul Worslings, Al McGlashan, everyone. You guys are out there in the industry doing it every day. This is your job. This is how you make your living. You all run different boats. You've all got different styles of fishing. You know, you're targeting different things, doing different things. For you, I would say a lot of game fishing.
Yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, we do. Like the other day, we were up fishing over on in the canoe, catching trout, redfin. We fished yesterday, the day before, catching kingies out the front. Then we came in just flick for flatties and stuff as well. So do a lot of all round. Game fishing would be our favourite. So with a boat for that, it'd be definitely bigger fuel tanks. that's probably the major thing that we'd run for that side. I think that's, you know, just so we've got ability to go further and further. We've changed the boat a lot. We put it up on YouTube. We put like tuna tubes on it. We've put bigger bilge pumps in them and, you know, those sort of things. So we've modified it quite a bit. And it's got to a stage where, got to say, I'm pretty happy with the whole thing. We put the numeric on it. Say the fuel economy is unreal with that compared to what we used to have with the Yamaha and stuff. So things like that. But there's always lots of little things that we're improving. Like I want to put a sonar in. They're too big to put in a boat. Apparently it'll sink if I put it in. But the minute they can make a proper sonar cheap enough to put in ours, it's, or small enough, it's going in.
Yeah.
But apparently, yeah, as they keep telling me I'm going to sink the boat with it. But I'm convinced I can get it in there.
I'm not quite sure how the boys from North Bank have done it. I have to ask Rob, but they've got stainless steel handles in all the best places. These guys get me into some of the most precarious places and I'm hanging off the side of the boat with the camera. They're ready to grab the camera, not me. So I have to be holding on. Previously, I've needed to tie ropes on, et cetera, to get myself off the side of the boat. The North Bank, I just grab hold of a handle. There seems to be one in all the perfect places. So that's one of the things I'd have to say I love the most about it.
I hate the bloody things. They're in the way. I want a nice flat gunwale so I can sit on it.
You're not hanging over the side quite as much.
Orange wants handlebars. It's
I like, love it.
Must be bad driving or something. That's when you're driving, Goose.
Oh, reversing right. up.
Well, what do you reckon is the best feature, Coops?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, obviously.
The door for your swordfish. There you go.
Well, even that was too small.
Yeah, the door, door wasn't big enough.
Windscreen wipers are pretty good. Without them, we'd be pretty. But no, I'm spoiled, you know, going having what would be some of the best fishing trailer boats in Australia to work on and stuff. So I don't know if I'm going to have much of a comment on it.
I got 10 foot tinny out the back, mate. That's your next boat. Don't worry about that.
Fair enough. Are you going to follow in Dad's footsteps, Coops? Is that the plan or where are you at?
Oh, I mean, I haven't really decided yet. I'm sort of going down the path of drone piloting at the moment. So I've got like a vet course for it to get my certificate 3 and stuff and all that stuff for droning. And then
put in layman's term, you're doing your pilot's license to fly drones.
Well, there you go.
I didn't even know what a vet course was. Everyone that's listening would be going, what?
I work with a lot of dudes that fly drones and do all that sort of stuff. So I was tracking where you're at. There are
everyone's smarter than me.
Younger generation is scared.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So for us oldies.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So when's that finished, mate?
Oh, I've got still another 6 months of that course, I think. Yeah. Finishes about term 3 for me at school.
Yeah.
But no, that's because it's just more accreditation, you know, to be able to hopefully go off and work doing photography and stuff on the water and all that. But yeah, just wherever life takes me, I guess, at this point.
It's an adventure still to unfold.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I like it. Don't get locked in. Don't get pigeonholed. All right, cool. So the other thing that I've noticed in the shows, you've started running, you've always run Shimano. So we're the same. We always run Shimano. I'm not lucky like you guys to get sponsored. Hint, hint, Shimano, just if you're listening. But so you've gone away from the Tiagras to the Talikas. I know you've been running the Talika 50s for the swords, all that sort of stuff. What's the real big reason there? There's a massive price shift for everyone that's buying them and having to pay money, just because I don't know whether you're aware of that or not, but it's a big price difference.
Don't worry, I still buy gear. I can't help myself. I still buy.
So I recently got a couple of the Talika 25s. We bought them while we were over the coast for switch baiting and casting and doing stuff like that. Had them on the boat for the trip and everyone that tried to cast them bird nested them and just couldn't get to grips with it. And dad, when it comes to that sort of stuff with the overheads, dad is on it. I mean, he, you know, I could hand him an overhead and he'll cast it and it won't bird nest. But even he was struggling with it. They've got a really smooth spooling, I suppose, or free spool.
Yep.
So he was really struggling with that. obviously the one thing we noticed was the weight and the center of balance, I suppose. But other than that, drag pressures, all those sorts of things, they all seem to be around the same point. And for what you're paying for and what you're getting, and Tiagras have been around. I remember watching Dad fish with those. That's 35 years ago, 40 years ago. Yeah,
mid-90s they came out. So the biggest thing with the Talikas is retrieve rate. So in high speed, you're cranking a meter every turn. So whilst a Tiagra is, I think it's just over half from memory. I have to check to make sure I'm right on that. I think it's half to two thirds. So what that means is, to give you an example, we're sword fishing. We dropped the Talica down. We dropped the Tiagra down. Put the drill on the Tiagra and hand wound the Talica up and still got up quicker.
Yeah, okay.
So the big thing for us above all else is that is your retrieve rate. So if we're chasing a marlin and you're whipping the boat around and running down a striped marlin, your anglers are cranking far quicker. Now, the Tiagra is a proven reel that is absolutely awesome and won't break. Like, my Talikas go into more services than my Tiagras do. So there's things there, like you haven't got a plate across the top. So with that overhang, we're saying with that really soft spool, it can wrap around the outside of the barrel there as well. So there's a couple of things like that. I'd love them to put a top plate on it and a ratchet that's louder. So the guys over in the US that cast with them use very long rods and use the rod and swing the bait out with it. So it is still a real art form to work. Like, it's not easy at all. It would be something that we don't use it much for that. It's mainly for trolling and stuff. And we find too with big tuna that it's the torque in them to get a fish up. So if you've got a big bluefin under the boat, you can put it in low gear and that. And Tiagras are good, but those Talikas just literally crank them up to the boat. Like, Coops was fighting at a swordfish this year that was hooked in the head, and we're just trying to get it up, and it was taking forever. I'm going, put it low gear, and literally winched it to the boat, and it came, like, it didn't stop. He goes, it just keeps coming up. Went, don't worry about going back to high, stay in low and just keep cranking it up.
That's where it really makes a difference, is when it's difficult, it simplifies it, makes it a lot easier for us for retrieval, for sure.
So for that side it is. But the problem is you can't get them at all at the moment. I think some shops have still got them, but I've had them on order, and that's to pay for them, for 6 months. And they've been, if I get them behind all the shops, sadly, I've got to wait for them. But for that, they're unreal. And the weight is exceptional. So we've got them. What are they? The ultra rods? Ultras? No, not ultras.
Hypers.
Hyper. Yeah. How good is
the hyper? Absolutely awesome outfit together. You can pick it up with one hand. They're not too heavy. And because they're smaller, like, they're full of, ours are all full of braid, 1,000 meters of 80, hollow core, that Power Pro stuff. And then it's just a top shot of 130 on top. And there's not a fish, unless we're going to Cairns, that I wouldn't be scared of catching. And we fish heavy because we want that one shot at that, whether it be a 200 kilo bluefin, that holy grail, or 1,000 pound sword or something. If we hook it, we want a good chance of catching it. So we're overgunning in a lot of cases, but we're only hoping for that one fish that's just like, when Coop's got that big sword, there was no question with it, just cranked him up and got him in an hour and a half, an hour and 40 minutes. Two hours, was it? Yeah, so got
him. The other, I hear what you're saying, Ords. the other thing that, like, I noticed when I was over the East Coast this year, a lot of guys are starting to go away from rollered rods. So now with the new guides, everyone's starting to go back to just the old straight shot guides, not running the rollers. Are you sort of transitioning that way, or is it something you look at, or not really?
We're still rollers. The big thing they're doing with that is because of braid in particular.
Yep.
So with the rollers, if it bounces up, it can, in a lot of cases, slide down the side of the roller between the roller and the housing. So it is an issue, and particularly with some of the rods these days, if the guys haven't got themselves harnessed up right, haven't got that rod loaded up perfectly and it's leaning to the side, or if it's a cheaper rod with a shit backbone where it's just curling over, there's a chance that you can the braid will jump across. So it is charter boats particularly would be doing it because they've got guys that don't know. I'm not a massive fan, but, I mean, I suppose the same thing is rollers, you have to check them. Like you get on a boat and the guys go, oh, yeah, yeah, and you run your fingers up, all the rollers are jammed. Well, they don't even work, so they're a complete waste of time. So they're higher, you know, maintenance, I suppose, at those ends. But you also keep that friction down. I mean, the really good guides that they're running are still sort of $150 a guide that are low friction, because you are putting a lot of pressure over them, you know, particularly too with braid that you've, if you've got a knot in it, you know, those sort of things that they're all playing. So if you've got the braid to mono knot, like a strike zone knot or something like that clunking through, I don't want that banging over any guides. So yeah, but it, again, they both work. If you're doing guides, you got to spend the bucks on really good guides.
Yeah. Speaking of good gear. So I've obviously, we like you, we spend it. This is our hobby. This is our passion. So we spend all our money on it. You know, I've over the years, I've taken my time, researched everything, got all the, like I said, we fish Shimano. So that's all that's on the boat is Shimano. So we've got all that gear, but I had the pleasure of jumping on a trailer boat be 3 or 4 weeks ago. Now we're over chasing barrels over at Port Mac. So I got the phone call from a mate. He's like, dude, you got to get over here. It's go time. So I drove all night, got over there, slept in the boat at the boat ramp, jumped on the boat, out we went. We'd been hunting around, hadn't seen much. And then this little trailer boat, it was only a 4 meter Quintrex, 4.5 meter Quintrex, half cabin job, was flagging us down. Like he was waving at us. And it was a young fella and his kid, like sitting on the boat. The rod was buckled over and he's like flagging us over and we get over to him. He's like, mate, can one of you jump on here and give me a hand? And we're like, oh, yeah, what's going on, mate? He goes, I've been on this fish for 4.5 hours. And I'm like, okay. And the guy that I was on the boat with, he's like, mate, do you want to jump on the boat? And I'm like, yeah, I'll jump on the boat. So I jump on this other boat and he hasn't got a harness. He's got a Beastmaster rod with a TLD 50 with 37 kilo line on it. So he's been holding onto this thing for 4.5 hours. They've been getting dragged around everywhere. His young fella's been driving the boat for him and everything. So I get on the boat and he's like, mate, grab the rod. And I'm like, no, man, it's your fish. I'm not, I'll get your harness. We'll get the harness off the other boat. And it was a braid harness. I'd never ever used the braid harness in my life. Like I've always used Black Magic. Equalizer harnesses. So I didn't know how to put this braid thing on or anything. So I've hooked it up how I thought it was meant to go. And he's fighting this fish. And another half an hour goes by and he's like, oh mate, can you grab the rod for me? I need to adjust the harness. So I'm like, yeah, all right, no probs. So I grabbed the rod. And I'm sort of holding this thing. And when I grabbed it, like we don't fish 37 kilo on our boat. The biggest we fish is 24. This thing took off and it nearly dragged me in the water. Like I was not ready for it at all. So I'm like, holy shit, like dragging me out the back of the boat. I'm looking at him like, mate, you held onto this thing for 4.5 hours. He's like, yeah, my arms are destroyed. Like, I'm like, all right. Next thing I know, he's putting the harness on me. And I'm like, mate, what are you doing? He goes, I can't hold the rod anymore. Like I'm cooked. I am done. So I'm like, all right, no problem. So I ended up being in the harness for another 2 hours on this fish, and we had it at the back of the boat a couple of times, and I swear it was every bit 160 kilos. Like this bluefin was massive. Like it was the biggest bluefin I've ever seen. So anyway, we're fighting this thing, and time went by. We ended up breaking it off 25 meters from the back of the boat. It had just worn through the 150 leader, but the gear. So he'd fought the fish for 7.5 hours. It had been like we dragged around everywhere, but the gear, like just, and I mean, you know, it's not the top of the line Shimano stuff by any stretch of the imagination. You know, you've got like what we were just talking about and then your TLDs, but it just held up like just quality gear. So he actually texted me when he got back to the boat ramp that night, and he's like, yeah, I've just gone in and bought a Black Magic harness and all that sort of stuff. Yep, sweet.
Investment. Well, those harnesses are good for that because they're really simple. They've got two straps, you pull them and that's pretty much it and you're ready to go. Like it's not hard to get them, you know. Well, I had Braid for a while and Braid work really well if it's set up for you. But if you want to set up for anyone else, you've got 40 bloody tags to pull on and everything else to readjust and chop and change. It's just, yeah.
Well, the funny part of the whole thing was I'd actually put that Braid harness on him backwards because I knew no idea how to put it on. So not only was he fighting the rod and the fish, he's fighting this harness because I had no idea how to put it on him and we had the wrong things hooked into the wrong places and everything. And I was just like, so hats off to him. But yeah, it was interesting. So what is the longest you've been on a fish for?
For me, 7 hours, 6 hours, 50 minutes for that big 155 bluefin would probably be the longest for that for me. Yeah. And that was the day before that. I fought one for 3.5 hours and snapped him off on the kelp. But yeah, that's the longest for me. And that's what, mate, if I could put 130 all the way through now, I won't fish that. I'm not interested in long fight anymore. It's pure torture.
What about you, Coops? Longest?
Oh, I think my longest would be 2 hours. I haven't done a real hard one yet.
I'm going to put him on 10 and put him on something big. What about you, Ords?
Yeah, Ords.
My blue marlin over at the Brawlers.
That was like 40 minutes.
I know, that's about my longest. What can I say? but I'm
smartest one out of the three, I think.
So stand up, I'm feeling stand up was about 40 minutes on a blue, and that's about my limit. And I have this was a couple of years ago now, but it did involve being refreshed with gin and tonics while I was firing it. So I had been seasick for about 3 days. So, it felt more like about 7 hours, but no, only an hour and 40 minutes.
I like the idea of that. That's a much better plan.
It is. All right, cool. So the last one I've got for you, your Marlin Doco. So I know you were recording that while we're away. And you spoke about it while we're away. When I'm actually hanging to see this thing, like Top Gun's being released in like in 8-9 days. So
you're as bad as all. George is bad. Came to see that as well.
But I'm more interested in seeing the blue the Marlin Doco. If I'm brutally honest. So like when am I going to get a taste of this Marlin Doco? When are we going to see it?
Well, it's definitely going to be more than 9 days at this stage. So we put production back because this year with that dirty water, even when we caught fish, the water was still crap, and when it was blue, it never lasted. So. Yeah, we're putting that on hold till next year to start again on it. So we've been shooting some stuff over in the West and all that for it. But we're hopefully going to start, we might put that back and do yellowfin or even the swordfish first. We're just trying to work on the funding side. But, yeah, it's been very frustrating. I mean, it's been probably our worst season ever for marlin on the East Coast. It's just been hard.
Underwater filming of it, for sure. Underwater filming. It's more like the Murray River out there than anything, isn't it?
Yeah, we jumped in and we jumped in on pygmy pilot whales because I got a permit to jump in on whales. And I literally swam up to them and hit them before I could see them. I'm swimming along going, where are these bloody things? I looked up, went, oh, he's right in front of me. Put the camera there and literally bumped in. And they've all turned around going, where'd you come from? Like, you know, and normally you come up with stuff because you always approach them so you don't want to disturb them. So you come up very slowly, let them see you. And then try and, drift in and get accepted so you get the shots. Oh, no, I've just barged straight into the middle of them. And they've all turned around like half asleep going, what are you doing? And because that permit only allows to come in unless you're in trouble and so it's all these sort of rules we've got to go by. And the poor things turned around and all looked at me like stunned and all swam off. And in the dirty water, they were gone in 2 minutes. So it's been an incredibly frustrating year for filming, but... I mean, compared to everyone else that's losing houses and stuff, I mean, we can't complain too much, I suppose. Just means we've just got to start again next year and get some better footage and hope for some cleaner water.
Yeah, okay.
They're too spectacular under the water to have substandard footage for them. So it'll be more worthwhile to hold off and get that good quality clear water and yeah, on such beautiful.
But we will be filming this year, so we've got more on swords. We're looking at doing another series for Seven Mate because they've been keen to do something. So, but do something that's a bit sort of more sort of, you know, not polished. It's just like a cruisy, you know, knockabout show that we're looking at doing. So race down, catch a couple of swords or something, shoot it and put it together. So we're just working on that at the moment and trying to put the finishing touches on that. So if that goes, hopefully later this year, that will go, hopefully going to air. Hopefully if everything goes to plan. Lots of fingers crossed, toes crossed, you know, trying to pull everything together at the moment. So yeah, but it's all going the right direction at the moment.
All right, excellent. All right, well, look, guys, it's getting late, and Al looks like he needs to go to sleep. There's some big yawns there.
I'm getting up early. I'm going kingy fishing in the mornings. I'm all excited.
Oh, yeah, whoop-de-doo. Some of us. whatever. I'm going out to fire a gun, so that'll be fine.
That's good, though.
Yeah. All right. Look, guys, really, really appreciate you jumping on the podcast again. It's always awesome having you guys there. A lot of stuff there to cover. So we'll get it down and dirty and get it up on the page. I really, like I said, if everyone that's listening gets a chance to jump on and have a look at the Pelagic Foundation, so make sure you do. It's definitely a really good cause. And as you can tell by speaking to Al and Ords and Coops and that, they're passionate about it, and it's going to benefit all of us as rec fishers. So make sure you do jump on there and have a look, and if you can, throw some money their way and get the sat tag and thing up and running. It'll be awesome if we all get involved in that. So guys, stay safe out on the water. If you're ever down in Vic, don't be afraid to come and look us up. I'm sure we can work out something. I can't catch anything in the bay, so don't ask to even go and catch flathead or anything because it's pointless. 50 wides drag squid in real quick, just so future reference. But yeah, if you're down this way looking for something to do, yell out, and I'm sure we'll tee something up. But once again, guys, thanks very much for jumping on the podcast, and look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Awesome, mate.
Thank you
for having us.